Welcome to another episode of CTV, Jose Can You See? We're live October 1st, 2003. Tonight's show is titled it, The Soul Force of Denis Kucinich. I don't know if all of you out there have heard of Denis Kucinich. He's running for president, running for the nomination for the Democratic Party. And if you're a longtime viewer of this show, you know we're not great fans of the Democratic Party in general, and a lot of us are ambivalent about the whole electoral representative system to begin with, because we're anarchists, some of us. Other of us, members of the society, are Democrats or what have you. So we're going to focus on Denis Kucinich tonight because I feel that he's the most progressive candidate out there. There's no Green Party candidate that's been announced yet, and so I thought we'd bring Denis Kucinich's name out to the public so you get a chance to learn how to pronounce it. Tonight we have two guests besides myself. My name's John, by the way. Two people who are involved with the local Kucinich campaign organization. We have Tony Brigham. There he is. Say hi.
Hi.
And we have Amy Cohn.
Hi.
Amy Cohn is the volunteer liaison for the local campaign, is that right?
That's right.
And Tony is just a grassroots supporter who's agreed to be with us. No official position with the campaign at all?
None whatever.
All right, well, thanks for both of you for being here. We'll be opening up the phone lines in a little while after we see a video clip introducing Denis Kucinich and after we get some introductory stuff out of the way. I thought first we'd let each of you say what got you involved in politics and why Denis Kucinich.
I've been involved in politics all my life, and I guess I can remember, in fact, distributing leaflets in 1964 because I was afraid for Lyndon Johnson, because I was afraid Barry Goldwater would be elected and use nuclear weapons in Vietnam. And so in 1968, I obviously wasn't working for Lyndon Johnson, but I've been involved in politics chiefly during the Vietnam War and the civil rights, the end of the civil rights era. And in the past few years, I've been pretty quiescent, but every now and then I come out of hiding, and sometimes I desert the Democratic Party and vote for a third party candidate who's attractive. I vacillate between despair and hope in this America of ours, and I'm always hoping for candidates who will be talking about the issues that Denis Kucinich is talking about peace as an alternative to war, and talking about social justice, which is really an equivalent of peace in a domestic sense, I think, and talking about international agreements and international comity as ways to obviate the need for war, using the United Nations and using diplomacy rather than threatening to send the Marines, and I really am enthused that finally we have a viable democratic candidate who seems to believe in these things. And I do too, so I'm happy.
Yeah, hope is certainly a happier state to be in than despair.
Yeah.
And I agree that for me, the Democratic Party has been a terrible disappointment for forever since I've looked at it, really. So it's different for me to get behind a Democratic candidate like Denis Kucinich.
Yeah.
What got you involved?
Well, I am a registered Democrat because I've always felt it was important to vote for the lesser of two evils. But I've never been active in politics. I've never donated money to a political campaign, nor have I ever volunteered my time. But when I first heard the war rhetoric of the Bush administration, it just really made me furious. And I started hearing about one congressman who was speaking out against the war. And I decided to find out more about him, and I was very impressed with his courage and integrity. And I decided that I wanted to spread the word about Dennis Kucinich. Also, I should mention I'm not a paid campaign staffer. I'm a local volunteer.
Huh. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I guess from my point of view, my first introduction to Dennis was seeing a videotape that I'd gotten from a little outfit called Democracy University. And this was back in 2000, long before this campaign started. And it was a conference called Who Owns America? And they had some interesting speakers come on. I think Bernie Sanders was there before Dennis Kucinich got up. And David Corton, who's an author, who wrote The Post-Corporate World. People who I admire, and then some people who I'd never heard of and were frankly uninteresting. But then Dennis got up there, and I'd never heard of him, and he was introduced. The lady who introduced him said, "This is the man who should be the next president of the United States." And he's not running this time, but he's the guy. And after I heard what he had to say, I was pretty excited about it. So I think we'll go to the first video clip. That's an introduction to Dennis Kucinich. It shows where he comes from, that he's a current congressman, a four-term congressman from Ohio. And that lasts about 5 minutes. And when we come back, we'll open up the phone calls and discuss what we saw.
This administration is taking our nation. If you're worried about the kind of country we're becoming, then we need to talk. Like you, over the past several months, I've become more and more worried, even angry about the actions taken on our behalf by the current administration. My friends, my family, the people I work with, we've all looked at each other and wondered, how did it come to this? How did the America we love and are so proud of, the America we grew up in, the America our parents and grandparents fought and died to protect, how did it change so dramatically? And where are the voices that would speak for us and against this onslaught? Where is someone in politics who has the guts to tell the truth and the courage to express the vision of a different kind of future for America? Well, not long ago, I started to hear about a congressman from Ohio who was speaking up, who was taking a stand against the madness, who was offering a different vision for America. His name was Dennis Kucinich. I went to his website, read his speeches, and I was encouraged. Then I went to hear him in person, and I was inspired. And I thought, now here is a man who needs to be listened to, with a message that desperately needs to be heard.
Our nation must take steps to make sure that we institutionalize the opportunity for peaceful discourse in our society. It is time.
In my world, there are two kinds of people. People who now believe we can actually change the direction of this country, and people who have not met Dennis Kucinich yet.
Yeah, I'm the only candidate in this race who's saying no to privatization of Social Security and is saying, take the retirement age back to 65. I'm the only candidate in this race who's talking about the trade issue. We have a $500 billion trade deficit. As President of the United States, one of my first acts in office will be to cancel NAFTA and the WTO. I'm the only candidate in this race who's talking about using the resources of this country to provide for universal public education, fully paid from pre-K, 3 years old, all the way to and including college. We have the money.
It's important for the United States to confirm officially our connection to nature by participating in the Kyoto Climate Change Treaty.
And I think he makes people feel like he's really talking to them. I think that's very important in America, that we have a campaign where the candidates actually ask what the people need. And I think that's what he's doing here.
When I heard him speak at that event, the first thought that crossed my mind was, there's the next president of the United States.
I,
Dennis Kucinich.
Dennis Kucinich.
Do solemnly.
Dennis Kucinich is a four-term congressman from the heart of Middle America, the 10th district in Ohio.
Stop this war! Stop this war!
He's the only presidential candidate who rallied opposition to the illegal war in Iraq.
America has money to blow up the bridges over Tigris and Euphrates, but no money to rebuild our bridges here at home.
His life reads like a profile in courage. In the 1970s, as the youngest mayor ever of a major city, Dennis bravely said no to an Enron-style takeover of Cleveland's city-owned power company, Muni Light.
When my moment came, when my test came, the test of whether the public interest is going to be defended against corporate power, which doesn't care about people, I took a stand, and I passed that test, and I said no to the sale of our municipal electric system.
In retaliation, major banks, which were interlocked with the private utility that would have become a monopoly by seizing Muni Light, drove the city into default. Dennis's political career was derailed. Later on, Dennis was vindicated for resisting a corporate power grab and saving Cleveland residents hundreds of millions of dollars on their electric bills.
He said, you know what? I'll take a risk on my political career because I believe this is important. And with the test of time, he was right. Muni Light is an important part of our fabric of our economic opportunities here in this community.
He has done so much for the people, so much for the people. Not just saving the Muni Light, which put a dent in his career, and people found out he was right, but he came back as a congressman and he saved the steel mills. He saved jobs at the hospital. So, I mean, his grassroots are from the neighborhood.
My politics literally came right from the streets of this community and of others like it. There's tens of thousands of neighborhoods just like this across America, and those are neighborhoods I can relate to. Those are neighborhoods that are just like the one.
Yeah, just like the one he came from, you were about to say. Welcome back. We've watched about 5 minutes of Dennis Kucinich, a little intro there. Hit on a bunch of different topics, NAFTA, WTO, trade, education, the Kyoto Protocol, Iraq, war, a fight against corporate power. Amy, if out of those that he just mentioned, which one really grabs you the most?
The fight against corporate power.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too.
I think so many politicians are, you know, bribed or bought by large corporations and the money that they give to their campaigns. And it disgusts me. And I think Kucinich has the courage to, and the guts to speak out about that. Mm-hmm. and maybe change that.
Yeah, he was effective in Cincinnati, Cleveland. Which was
Cleveland.
Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
When he saved their public power company. We can talk more about that. That's a real interesting story. Tony, which issue really grabs you the most?
Well, I think, his commitment to peace, mm-hmm. and I really believe that he has that commitment. I've read some of the things that he's said, and I think he understands it on a level more than, not just a superficial level either. It would be really refreshing to have a president who is willing to take some risks for peace rather than throw us into a new war every few years. In fact, we can't afford otherwise, and I think that the domestic needs of any country in this century are going to require that we just simply eliminate war in order to take care of our people. There are too many people on Earth. We can't afford to keep taxing them and wasting the money that we tax from them to make armaments, to kill some of them and maim others, and make the world a hellhole for millions of people. We just really need to get away from that, and we can do it. We have the means to do it, mm-hmm. but
But Dennis Kucinich is the only candidate so far that who's convinced me that he has the will to do it,
right.
and the perspective and the depth to do it.
In that little clip, you did mention the idea of institutionalizing peace, of building institutions to accomplish peace, as something that you, it doesn't, I guess what he's thinking is peace doesn't just, isn't going to happen naturally. We actually have to work at it. And I know that he's mentioned that having a Department of Peace at a cabinet level. Do you happen to know what his ideas on the Department of Peace are?
Well, looking, just simply reading it, I could give them to you, but the idea is a great one. If we take some of these ideas that he has enunciated, that violence and peace, nonviolence and peace are what will prevail. We cannot continue to believe that violence and war are inevitable. Then we need to address that through our governmental enterprise and really put our backing behind that as a nation. And it seems to me that a Department of Peace could begin to do that in the same way that our Defense Department has defended us in the last century and two centuries. I don't know the details of what he has proposed for okay. Department of Peace.
I have something here that was emailed to me. Let's see. Well, the Department of Peace focuses on individual and group responsibilities for establishing nonviolence as an organizing principle in society. The department would focus on non-military peaceful conflict resolutions, prevent violence, and promote justice and democratic principles to expand human rights. Domestically, the department would be responsible for developing policies which address issues such as domestic violence, child abuse, mistreatment of the elderly, and other issues of cultural violence. Internationally, the department would gather research, analyze foreign policy, and make recommendations to the president on how to address the root causes of war and intervene before violence begins, while improving national security, including the protection of human rights and the prevention and de-escalation of unarmed and armed international conflict. That's a summary, and then there are highlights of the, does it help?
That'd be a pretty big department, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, considering that the State Department, not only under Bush, but under Clinton before, had, 13 years of sanctions, that was their attempt mm-hmm. to make peace in Iraq, pretty boneheaded way of approaching it. It sounds, just as a gloss, what you read sounds like it's more likely to achieve positive results than this strongman attitude that our country generally takes, superpower, obey or suffer the consequences type thing. I think we should open the phones right now to start taking some calls. The number is 459-4881. Again, it's October 1st, Wednesday, so call in live tonight if you have any questions. Again, that opening video we saw, he mentioned trade, that there's a $500 billion trade deficit. That's a lot of tamales going out of our pockets to other people, and there's and with nothing coming back in return. Education, he mentioned the Kyoto Protocol, Iraq. The fight against corporate power. So if you have any questions about where Kucinich stands on any of those, we already have a caller? We possibly have a caller already, but hey, don't let that stop you. Just we're going to take calls for the rest of the evening, pretty much. We'll have a few more video clips to break it up here. I kind of wanted to get back to the Muni Light thing, because that, mm-hmm. that fight against corporate power... and the market-based solutions, they're called. it really strikes me, because I'm not a big fan of capitalism. And I know Kucinich is not like a socialist, or he's not going to turn us into a vastly different economic system, but just his realization that of the overbearing power of corporations in a market versus
people power in that same market. At least he has that realization. And we do have a call, so we'll go to that. Tomas, you're on CTV.
How you doing, my brother? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Thanks for your call. What kind of question do you have about Dennis? Or any kind
of I'm a pro-life right-wing conservative, but I am also against NAFTA and GATT because I see all the jobs leaving the country. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if those two representatives there have thought about the common ground that might exist between what would seem two opposite political philosophies.
Did either of you want to comment to that? The common ground between people who consider themselves conservatives but are also opposed to the trade arrangements that the conservatives have gotten us into, and Clinton too, with NAFTA and the WTO shipping our jobs overseas, and whether you see there's a common ground.
Common ground just on the trade issue, Tomas?
Yeah.
Or other issues?
I would like to see, for example, the right and the left wing work on some common ground instead of battling each other, and I think it's very important that we try and save jobs in this country. You know, it's not just NAFTA and GATT, but it's the H-1B visas that are taking high-tech jobs. Y'all aware those are high-tech jobs going out?
Yeah, they over in India, especially a lot of computer engineers, I know, have had their jobs disappeared over to India, where I think on our last episode of this show, the figure that they put was you get five engineers over there for the same price as one over here.
It'd be nice, I think, if in Congress we had some people get together from both sides of the aisle, because we lost 3,000 people on 9/11, but we're losing hundreds of thousands of high-tech jobs. You know, and it's the Republicans and the Democrats both that are supporting these programs, as, of course, they are supporting NAFTA and GATT. And so that's just what I wanted to say. Thank you for the opportunity.
Can I ask you a question, Tomas?
Yes.
Do you feel strongly enough about this issue and the fact that Kucinich is really the only candidate, conservative, liberal, or any candidate for president who's talking about it? Would that be enough to make you vote Democratic in the next election if he were the candidate against Bush?
Well, the reason that I'm on the right wing is because of the social issues, John. And I consider those principles as opposed to planks. But, I still, just admire anybody who steps out against both political parties and stands up for the common man, because I don't, who is standing up for the middle class in this country now?
Yeah, that's true. You don't see it very much from the leadership in Washington, at least as you see it on the mainstream media. They seem to focus on, how many millionaires are in their club paying, $50,000 a plate for their little hot dog meals. There's not the only time the common people are ever shown is when they're out in the streets, with placards and stuff, being a rabble, and that makes them look like they're fools from ancient Rome or something, just raising hell for no reason. So,
Jonathan, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for your call.
This right-wing conservative calling your show. Yeah.
Sure thing.
Keep on strong with democracy, brother.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.
But, the Democratic candidates will speak up for the middle class during their debates, in their sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, they're always seem to be willing to put their finger in the wind, to catch what breeze is happening. But when it comes down to the power plays, they're looking at the big bucks coming in from the lobbyists.
Yeah, but everyone will play to the middle, but the people who will speak and actually do something for the people at the bottom of the socioeconomic heap, the lower class people, are not going to be in the Republican Party.
very likely. They're going to be either in the Democratic Party or in the Greens Party. And that's true whether you talk about issues of the environment. We're talking in Grand Rapids about remediating lead poisoning. A lot of poor children, a lot of minority children, are lead poisoned because of the paint that's been put on our houses and in our houses by industry, by corporate America, that compounded the paint with lead in it, and children are being permanently scarred mentally and developmentally because of this. And you know, in a just world, the people who did this to them would have to chip in and help undo the environmental degradation that's causing this, get the lead out. And instead we get a federal grant. You know, maybe if Tomas and us so-called left-wingers could get together and sue the butts off the paint companies and the big refineries that put lead in the gasoline. There are children on my block who got high lead levels because they dug and played in the dirt. They lived in a brand new house, and yet they got high blood lead levels because of the dirt, the lead in the soil. And I just think that it's going to be the Democrats and people of their ilk who are addressing these problems. I have confidence that Dennis Kucinich will. He's strong on the environment, and the environment in the urban areas includes lead poisoning and lead in the soil and lead paint. Mm-hmm. We got to get it out.
Yeah. I haven't heard him speak too much to the environment. He mentioned the Kyoto Protocol in that little clip we mentioned, you know, the Kyoto Protocol, which, in case the viewers don't know, is supposed to limit greenhouse gases put out by industry and automobiles, and most of the rest of the world has signed on to it or is at least considering it. Russia, just within the last couple of days, was going to announce. I'm not sure whether they did, but the United States is the only really big industrialized country that I know of that Bush just dropped the whole thing. Beyond that, support for that, I'm not sure about Kucinich, except that from generalized statements that he made, I don't think he could possibly ignore the environment. I meant to read this kind of at the opening of the show, because it's the name of the program again was The Soul Force of Dennis Kucinich, and this quote struck me. He says, "It is critical that we summon this soul force, this heart force, to celebrate the interconnectedness of humanity, the possibility of the world at peace." Now, I find it very hard to consider that a guy who sees the interconnectedness of humanity in the world would let the environment fall down on the ground. We have another caller, Mathir. I hope I'm pronouncing that
Matthew?
Right. Oh, Matthew, sorry.
yeah, it's Matthew.
Hey, Matthew.
Hello.
Thanks for your call.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thanks for doing the show. I had a couple questions. I've always been under in the past couple years, I've been under the impression that what's really best for the environment is changing things through organized labor. And I know Kucinich has quite a history with the AFL-CIO, and I was just wondering if you could maybe touch on a little history of his like involvement with that. And and as Tomas mentioned, kind of a need for common ground, I really think that is the common ground is that we're all workers, we're all like selling our labor, and whether you know liberal or conservative or whatever. So I just wanted to see if you could give us the other viewers and myself a bit of the background of his involvement with the labor movement, and also I've seen in some of the literature that he intends to sort of revolutionize the Democratic Party itself. So I was wondering, you know, what you had to say about that, and also how that applies to the AFL-CIO, if he has any words about, you know, changing that, because it seems that, you know, the unions, the AFL-CIO, some of them aren't really representing the workers, and that there's kind of a disillusionment of workers with that. So, I don't know. I guess it's kind of a big question, but basically just a little bit of the history of his involvement with unions and how he plans to change the AFL-CIO, because, you know, I heard that the fight for corporate power, or the fight against corporate power, you know, some of that has to do with the union movement, and some of the unions nowadays are just as bad as corporations. Like, they're just as corrupt, or, you know, they don't represent the workers' interests. So I don't know anything you have to say about that.
All right. Either of you have any ideas about that, the union issue?
Well, first of all, I was told the other day that by one of the people in the campaign. In fact, I think it was Bob who said that Dennis Kucinich has a 98% approval rating from in the labor movement's assessment of his votes in Congress. In other words, he's right up there with Dick Gephardt.
He beats all of them. He has the highest voting record, 98% of any of the candidates. John Edwards is second at like 94%. Yeah.
And
impressed.
Many of the things that labor has fought for a long time are embodied right in the statements of belief and platform that I've seen. The ones that I'm holding in my hand talk about pension rights. They talk about keeping the Social Security age at 65. They talk about full Social Security benefits for everyone. They talk about retirement rights and pension rights. The notions about free trade that we've touched on here go to Matthew's question, and I think that Kucinich has taken a very courageous stand on NAFTA and on fast track legislation. He's just saying no to it. What we need to do is go back and start over again, and take a good long look at this, and take seriously the issues of workers' rights in other countries, the right to organize, the right to strike, and the right to secure a decent wage. If you're, say, Malaysian or Chinese, just isn't there. And if we, you know, this is perhaps one of the failings of the labor movement, that it hasn't been concerned enough about what was happening in other parts of the world. We essentially are hemorrhaging, as a previous caller mentioned, hundreds of thousands of jobs from this country. First they went to the Maquiladora side of the Rio Grande, and now they're going to Asia and many other places, from, you know, Haiti to Bangladesh. Some of our production will never come back. I'm convinced of that. I imagine Kucinich understands that, but he talks about retooling to retain the industry that we still have, and the kinds of cooperation that's going to have to take place if we're to achieve that. There are other aspects to this. Healthcare is a big one. Unfortunately, health care has been linked to employment in this country, and he would break that linkage apart and make it a right that all Americans had.
We'll talk a little bit more about health care after the next video clip, which is about health care. You had something to say, Amy?
I did. I wanted to mention that Kucinich has talked about cutting the defense budget by 15% and using that to for jobs creation, for education, pre-K through college. He's also talked about breaking up corporate monopolies in favor of, you know, workers' rights. So if that speaks to your question, Matthew.
You still
if
there,
you're
Matthew?
Still there.
I guess Matthew's off the line. Do you know if has he gotten any of the unions, large or small, to endorse his candidacy, or is this too early in the process? Do they usually wait until a nomination happens before they endorse?
They'll be a little more coy than that, I think, than to endorse so early.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yep.
But they're aware that they have Labor is aware that it has a friend in Kucinich. I'm sure of
definitely.
That.
Definitely.
Okay. We're going to go to the next videotape here, which is, as I said, about health care. It's not a very long one, maybe 3 minutes long or so. So let's show clip number two.
Financed national health care? Well, it's true. In fact, more than 40 million Americans have no health coverage at all. None. And 30 million more have just the bare minimum. And those of us who can't afford adequate coverage are paying far too much for what we get. Meanwhile, private health insurance is one of the most profitable businesses in America.
We have a market-based healthcare system. And so if you can afford it, you can get the care. But if you can't afford it, you don't get the care. And more Americans, especially Americans who do work, are finding that they don't have the coverage which can get them the care they need. Now, when you consider the tremendous profits of the insurance companies, when you consider that managed care has meant managed money, when you consider that senior citizens who have bought into these policies are finding they're getting excluded from certain types of coverage or they're paying higher copays, when you consider that the cost of prescription drugs has skyrocketed, where the pharmaceutical companies have become the fastest growth industry in America, if not the world, when you consider all those things, you realize that we have been deprived of quality health care in this country by a market-based system that is functioning only in the private interest and not in the public interest, and I intend to change that.
This is not just a national crisis, this is a national disgrace, because we deserve better. We deserve it, and we can have it. What can you do? You can support the candidacy of Dennis Kucinich. He is the only candidate with a plan for fully paid national health insurance for all. And oh yes, you can vote for a change.
Yeah, national disgrace about the health care. In fact, I just wanted to read out of yesterday's Grand Rapids Press, Tuesday, September 30th, page 3. Millions of us lost insurance in 2002, census stats say. The number of Americans without health insurance increased by 6% in 1 year. That means that if that trend continues, no one in the United States would have health insurance within a decade. That's what 6% loss means. 43.6 million uninsured. That's 15.2% of all Americans have no health care whatsoever. None. And that includes me. I have none. No dental, no nothing. It all comes out of my pocket. The average cost for a family policy is $9,000 a year. You know, that's a third of most people's income right there. In some Michigan stats, they said 11% of Michigan residents had no health insurance. That's slightly better than the national average, and that's because of Michigan's strong labor unions have helped to keep the state's percentage of uninsured residents down. But still, 110,000 people in 1 year in Michigan lost their health insurance last year. 110,000 people with no medicine. It's a total national disgrace. We are live again. Let's have the phone number up there so we can get some calls. Does this piss you off? It pisses me off, you know, that the, like you said, the market-based system is like, if you can afford it, you've got it. But healthcare isn't something that's based on how much money you have in your pocket. You get sick whether you're rich or you're poor. And some comments?
Well, healthcare is equivalent to the right to live, isn't it? In many cases. Mm-hmm. If you can't afford essential healthcare, you are going to have a shorter and less happy life. And it's one of those things that we all need, mm-hmm. you know, along with food and water and air to breathe.
Right. What? Go ahead.
I think that the costs of healthcare are just so inflated because of the lobbying that pharmaceutical companies have to do, you know, in order to get approval for their medications, that kind of thing. Maybe getting approval for them without going through testing. You know, the pharmaceutical companies is now the largest lobby. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the you know, the amount they spend on lobbying, but it's just astronomical. And in return for that, if you will, you know, our costs go up.
Right. And it's also what they get out of it, it seems to me, is you know, they're pushing all this money into the system that greases certain wheels that pushes a certain propaganda line out there so that on mainstream TV or on the talk show radios, mm-hmm. the line that gets put out is any talk about covering everybody is paramount to a communist overthrow of our free system in the United States. That first we'd have socialized medicine and then free speech would be out the window. You know, that's the kind of connection that kind of money being pumped into a single viewpoint makes come out the other side of the media. That's kind of how I see it. And I'm real happy that I know some of the other Democratic candidates kind of fuzzy foot around talking about how to take care of these terrible numbers to get more people insured. They'll talk about insuring children, for instance, or mm-hmm. making it easier for employers to insure. Kucinich seems the only person who says, no, those are only half baked solutions.
He wants solution. To change the system completely, mm-hmm. When the others seem to want to merely tweak it,
yeah.
which you know wouldn't really change. And Kucinich talks about actually this is a study by the General Accounting Office in Washington. They found that if the U.S. were to shift to a system of universal coverage and a single payer, as in Canada, the savings in administrative costs would be more than enough to offset the expense of universal coverage. Compare this with the $1 trillion tax cut for the wealthy. You know, I'm sure we could fund universal health care for all. It's just a matter of where our priorities are. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a priority for Kucinich, universal health care. When the clip was rolling, I was reviewing my notes, and one of the callers asked about the environment. You brought us to the subject of the environment. He's also, he's proposing, if I could just digress for a minute, proposing to lead our country to 20% renewable energy by the year 2010. So,
well, I think that's a great idea. I studied renewable energy for a little bit in college, you know, solar design, housing design, and solar electricity generation and whatnot. And I've been, you know, ever since then, been real disappointed at that things haven't been moving forward in that regard. We're down to 15 minutes left in the show, so I think we'll get to show that last clip so we can start to wrap up the show. The last clip is a question on everybody's mind. Can he actually win this? And I think he does a good job of addressing that in the affirmative. He seems to believe it, and I think if everybody could get behind him, he would win this. So let's show clip number...
Generations.
And I've heard so many young people say, you know what, here is a candidate with integrity, he speaks the truth, and we haven't heard that, and we really want to get involved.
So inspiring to hear someone say all the things that are deep in my heart, that are the yearning for the things that I want this country to be.
I've never imagined that there could be anybody in politics who would be that honest and have that worldview of how everything is interconnected, and to see with such, just with such passion about the possibilities of America.
If you look at American history, usually every 30 or 40 years, there comes along a generation that takes a good look at democracy and corrects its course where it needs to be corrected and reclaims it where it needs to be reclaimed. And I think that this is one of those times.
Now, I know some of you are thinking, okay, I've heard all this, it sounds interesting, can you win? Let me tell you why I believe I can win. I've traveled this country in the last year, and I've heard the American people respond to the themes that I've talked about here. I come from the heart of America in Cleveland, Ohio. The constituency I have is a constituency which is much like that throughout the country. I've shown an ability to get votes in areas where other Democrats can't get votes, yet without in any way compromising on a progressive political platform. As a matter of fact, I think that's what attracts people to what I stand for. Not backing down, but moving forward. Standing up and speaking out. Having the willingness and the courage to speak out. That's why people will vote. I think that it's precisely because I'm not willing to compromise on these basic social and economic interests that we can rally people. Americans are ready for a new vision. They're ready for a dynamic approach. They're ready for somebody who's willing to stand up and speak out and challenge this administration. We can win this.
All right, he believes he can win. Do either of you think he stands a chance?
I think he stands a chance, I do. If I can just read here, Kucinich was elected in Ohio's 10th congressional district, where he now serves, by 64% in 1998 and by 74% in 2000 and 2002. And this area normally votes about 45% Democratic. He attracts progressive swing voters, even Republicans. The independent media loves him, you know. If you check out independent media, he's much talked about and revered, but we don't hear about him in the corporate media, corporate-sponsored media.
A little bit of fear, probably, on their part, I would guess.
I understand he's been leading the effort to sustain Congress's veto of the Federal Communication Commission's new arrangements for concentrating more of our telecommunication industry in fewer mm-hmm. corporate hands, and I think he hasn't gotten much play on the corporate media because of that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a chance, and because Kucinich has such good standing in the labor movement, as well as good credentials as a liberal, and I think he can appeal to people from a broad spectrum of American life. He can appeal to minorities. He's strong on bread and butter issues. He's strong on protecting workers' rights. He's strong on civil rights. And he's very strong on economic issues, as we've touched on a number of them here. And I think all those things are going to count as more and more people learn about Dennis Kucinich. Our challenge is to get them acquainted with him and what he's stood for and does stand for.
Yeah, and not only that, but each time he's been elected to a position, city council, mayor, congressman, he's beaten an entrenched Republican incumbent who was supposedly unbeatable. You know, so that's exciting. And he's building he and his supporters are building a grassroots campaign that's reaching out to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I'd noticed some similarities between Kucinich's campaign this time around and Nader's campaign of 4 years ago with the Green Party, of, you know, that first the mainstream media would not cover Nader at all.
Right.
It wasn't until tens of thousands of people would show up and pay money out of their pocket to hear a politician talk like he's a rock star or something. That they said, well, we can't ignore this. And they still didn't give him his fair shake. But I think Kucinich is attracting some of the same people that Nader did, who were not wild about the Democratic Party or definitely the Republican Party. And weren't even necessarily Green members, had never heard of the Green Party, but through college campuses and through whatever programs they're involved in, they found out that Nader had this message, and it got them fired up. And I see some of that happening with Kucinich, too, on the Internet especially.
Yeah, I definitely do, too. What were you going to say?
I'm listening intently. I'm not sure what I'm going to say next.
We still have time for one more phone call if anybody wants to have a comment or a question. Otherwise, I think it would be probably a good time to move on to what the viewers can do, how they can get involved. We'd heard just rumors that Kucinich is coming to the state in maybe 1 week or 2 weeks. None of us have the exact things. He's going to be down in the Detroit area and possibly one stop in Grand Rapids on the 15th. But just try to keep in touch with the media and I don't know, how would people find out about whether he's going to come?
They can contact our campaign, our local campaign at the grassroots level. Mm-hmm. Grand Rapids for Kucinich. Our email is nero@yahoo.com. It's all one word. And yeah, he's confirmed to be in Detroit at one of the airports on Monday, the 13th of October. And then he's addressing the Arab American Institute on Friday, the 17th of October. And then he's going to be in Detroit at the last Congressional Black Caucus debate on Sunday, the 26th. These are all, you know, confirmed events taking place in the Detroit area. So if anyone's interested in going, we'll be carpooling to those events. We want to show as much support as possible. And, to speak to the electability, that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why we're working at the grassroots level. That's why we're talking to our families and friends about Dennis Kucinich. That's why we're leafleting, going door to door, making phone calls. Because if we can get the word out, he's got so much appeal to the common citizen.
You know, you can see it in his face. He has an open face.
He seems very good natured and good humored to me, even just from the little clips we've seen, and I've seen him speak for an hour in front of on videotape anyway, speak for an hour, and he's a powerful speaker, you know, an inspirational speaker. I think a little bit of Kucinich propaganda. Yeah, if you contact the local campaign, there's a lot of things like that we just saw on the screen, some little speech pamphlets that you can read more about where he's at, these little playing card type things that have points of his platform on the back, and representing labor, organizing the workers' White House, and here's some picketers, and Kucinich is right there with him holding the sign, you know, in solidarity with the UAW locked out workers. And yard signs and bumper stickers. Oh, and we do have a call. We have time for one call, and it's Rick on the line. Thanks, Rick, for your call.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I think Mr. Kucinich is a good man, and his issues are probably a lot of issues I could agree with, but to be perfectly honest, he doesn't have a chance for the nomination, let alone the general election. And I wonder what the panel thought about General Wesley Clark as a good candidate to beat Bush in the general election.
Well, if you want to vote for Republican in the Democratic primary, I guess you could go and do it.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that?
Well, he just declared himself a Democrat about when he threw his hat in the ring.
Yeah, but wait a minute now. He voted for Nixon once and Reagan twice. I did that.
Hey, Rick, I saw a quote just a couple days ago that had Wesley Clark saying, the question was, how come he's not in the current administration? And he said it's because Karl Rove would not return his phone calls. Otherwise, he would be in the Bush administration right now.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's not exactly what he said.
Yeah, it is. That's what this
Well, what about Dennis Kucinich switching his position on abortion?
He's pro-choice.
Yeah, but he wasn't. He just became pro-choice when he started running for president.
Yep.
So that's not a lack of principle, the same as Mr. Clark's?
Well, if I may,
fair, you know.
There's two ways to look at that. One would be to be cynical and say, yeah, he's just an opportunist, and, you know, putting his finger in the wind and saying, well, this will be more electable. The other is to say he had an honest look at his own position and decided to change them.
Well,
and that to me is a honorable thing.
Well, then why can't you say that about Mr. Clark?
Well, Rick, to be honest, I don't know enough about Wesley Clark yet. He's just entered the race, and he doesn't have his things solidly down yet as far as where he stands on domestic issues and that kind of thing.
Well,
so,
wanting him to win things. I've been to Clark Maddie before he entered the race, so I think we got a good man in there now who get the nomination. He'll beat Bush. Straighten this country out.
All right, well, thanks for your call there.
I think a lot of people agree with the caller, but
I think a lot of people do, too. To me, it's kind of conspiratorial almost that 2 seconds after Clark announces he's number one. That's kind of like Clinton. No one knew who Clinton was, and 5 minutes after he announced he was number one in the polls, and then he went to win.